Thank you for being with us today. We all managed to get in this morning. I actually like this. They sort of opened the government 2 hours late, so they cleared the roads for us. And we were all able to get in much more easily, I suspect, than otherwise. But let me welcome you. We're delighted to have you here today for this conference on India as a global power, contending views from India. The conference is an outgrowth of a multi-year research project here at the Elliott School and the Segur Center for Asian Studies, known as Worldviews of Aspiring Powers. It's a program that is sponsored by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and is conducted in its early phases at least by me and Professor Deepa Olapalli, who will be with us for much of the day. The Worldviews of Aspiring Powers project is part now of a larger research program hosted at the Segur Center, known as the Rising Powers Initiative. I'm pleased to tell you that we have just launched another new version of the Rising Powers Initiative website, which you can visit and learn more about the initiative at simply www.risingpowersinitiative.org. Now, the Rising Powers Initiative is actually one of three projects that Carnegie supports at the Elliott School under their program to focus on pivotal powers in the world in a changing global environment. The other two programs here at the George Washington University are the Project on Middle East Political Science, known as POMEPS. Everything is known by acronyms in Washington, as you know. That program is run by Professor Mark Lynch at the Institute for Middle East Studies. And the second program is called New Approaches to Research and Security in Eurasia, PONARS Eurasia, and that is run by Professor Henry Hale in our Institute for European, Russian, and Eurasian Studies. Now, just last week, Carnegie announced that it had awarded the Elliott School a grant of over $2 million to support these projects. The Worldview Project was initiated 2 years ago, and its purpose is to examine the internal discussions of foreign policy debates taking place in five aspiring powers. We call them rising and or aspiring powers because in some cases, maybe like Japan, they're already risen powers. But in any case, they're all powers that are exerting more influence on the global scene. And the project brings together specialists on U.S. foreign policy, such as myself, and then country and regional specialists, right, that work on the countries that we're interested in, such as Professor Deepa Olapalli in the case of India. For each country, we put those two specialists to work on analyzing the internal foreign policy debates. We hosted a series of regional conferences in 2010 in India, Russia, and China, and then an all-inclusive symposium in Washington in April of last year. And out of that project has come now a volume that is going to be published later this year by Oxford University Press, entitled, in fact, Worldviews of Aspiring Power, Domestic Foreign Policy Debates in these five countries, China, Iran, India, Russia, and Japan. Now, the project also features, by the way, other publications, including periodic policy alerts, the most recent one being, in fact, our effort to sort of survey reactions in these aspiring countries to the death of Kim Jong-il in North Korea. So those are all available on the website associated with the project. Now, there is also, by the way, some flyers about the forthcoming book on the registry or just on the publications table there just before you enter the room. Now, today's conference is the first in a series of conferences where we are interested in bringing those foreign policy debates in these countries to Washington. That is, to give the representatives of these perspectives in these countries a chance to talk about and perhaps, if they wish, to debate the policies of those countries in Washington so that we get a better sense of how these countries are thinking about their new role and their emerging roles in the world. So we will be doing a conference in April 24th on Russia, and we'll be doing two conferences next academic year on China and on Japan. I think it's terribly important that we focus on these debates because foreign policy is contested in all countries, just like domestic policy, and that's particularly true in democracies like India and the United States. But it's even true in authoritarian countries or more authoritarian countries such as Russia and China. And we need to be aware of these debates, otherwise we'll be caught by surprise. So one of our interests in today's conference is in fact to anticipate, to learn more about the Indian debate, learn more about the American reaction to that Indian debate, and thereby learn more about the possible changes that might occur in U.S.-Indian relations in the future. So the morning panels will feature the domestic discussions in India, and then the first panel in the afternoon will feature the reaction of various points of view in the United States to the Indian debate and to the whole question of U.S.-Indian relations. In between those morning and afternoon panels, of course, we're extremely pleased to host as our luncheon keynote speaker the Indian ambassador to the United States, the Honorable Nirupama Rao. Now, there's unfortunately one significant change in the program which I need to tell you about. Ed Luce, the correspondent, Washington correspondent for the Financial Times, who was going to moderate an on-the-record interview this afternoon with two of our government officials, Mr. Scheer, from the Defense Department and Mr. Blake from the State Department. He was called unexpectedly to South Carolina over the weekend to cover the upset victory of Newt Gingrich in the Republican presidential primary. So we fell victim to politics in this case, and he was unable then to complete the preparations that have to be done with, as you can imagine, government officials for an on-the-record interview. But here's what we're going to do. I think we have a good replacement for that panel. We're going to bring the Indian guests back up to the podium for that last panel, give them a chance to react to the American debate, which they will have heard in the preceding panel, and then open it up for your questions, because in the morning there may be limited time for questions from the audience. So we'll look forward to that wind-up event of our program. Now, there's another role, by the way, for you as the audience. We're very interested in how you react to these discussions and these conferences here in the university setting. So there is an evaluation form in your conference packet, and we'd be very grateful if you would take a few minutes at the end of the day to fill that out and then just deposit it in one of the boxes. I think the boxes are clearly marked. They're pink boxes for those evaluations. Finally, before I turn the floor over to my colleagues, let me thank some people involved. Obviously, a conference of this sort is a major undertaking, and we're most grateful, of course, to our sponsor, the Carnegie Corporation of New York, and the liaison officer there for our program, Pat Nichols. She has been delayed this morning in New York, but she will be with us later in the day. Second, we have an extraordinary faculty and student body here at the Elliott School, and I want to thank all of those who have been involved in the World Views Project over the past 2 years. From our faculty, that includes in particular Professors David Shambaugh, our China expert, and Professor Mike Mochizuki, our Japan expert. From the staff, I want to say special thanks for the extraordinary efforts of our staff, and particularly our assistant director for the Rising Powers Project, Matt Grieger, and then those very able students who assist him, or very able assistants who assist him, Winnie Nam, Amy Shee, Josie Keller, and Chris Wong. All of these young people were or are students here at the Elliott School, and they indicate the high quality of the student body at this excellent institution. We were just recently rated, by the way, among the top 10 graduate IR programs in the country in the latest issue of the Journal of Foreign Policy. Now, last of all, I want to thank, on behalf of me and Deepa, the cooperation in putting on this conference that we have had from the Center for a New American Security. We are interested in running all of these conferences now to showcase the domestic debates in these rising powers. We're interested in running those with public policy institutes in Washington. We want to bridge the gap between our academic and educational concerns in the university environment and, of course, the very important policy interests and policy process that surrounds us here in Washington. So it's been an enormous help to us to be able to work with the Center for New American Security, CNAS as it is known by its acronym, and I want to thank them in particular for the work that has gone into this conference. It's been a great pleasure to work, for Deeper and me to work with Richard Fontaine, who will be chairing one of our panels this afternoon, and his colleagues at CNAS. Let me at this point then welcome to the podium the Chief Executive Officer of CNAS, Nathaniel, or as he is more commonly known, Nate Fick. You have his bio in your packet, and by the way, you have all the bios, so we're not going to bore you up from the podium with those bios, so I don't need to introduce him. I will simply say, however, as an old ex-paratrooper, and I emphasize that word old, that Nate had a very distinguished military career as a Marine officer before he assumed his current duties at CNAS. So, Nate, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to our institute and to the Elliott School.
Thank you very much, Henry. Henry, thanks for the warm welcome, and thank you all for being here today. I'm going to keep my comments brief. I know we're all anxious to get on with the program. My name is Nate Fick. I run the Center for New American Security. I just want to offer a special thanks right up front to my colleague, Richard Fontaine, who really took the lead on our side in making this possible. And I want to share with you just a quick story, because I had a funny series of serendipitous events last week that struck me, given how we were all going to spend today. I was talking with a member of our team, Bob Kaplan, on the phone. And Bob, if you don't know him, is a writer at The Atlantic. He spends a lot of time working from his home alone in Western Massachusetts. And he gets into these reveries sometimes. And so I talked to him on the phone, and he said, I've just been reading Tagore. And I'd never read Tagore. But Bob waxed poetic about Tagore for a few moments. And then the next day I was meeting with an American admiral here in Washington who said to me the same thing. And I spoke then on Thursday with a grad school classmate of mine who now has the enviable job of starting Harley Davidson's business in India. And he said the same. And so I stopped at the bookstore on my way home after work on Friday. And so I spent some time this weekend reading. And one phrase from one of his poems stuck with me. He makes the point that we need to have a more capacious sense of we. And after I looked up the meaning of the word capacious, I thought that's really a wonderful turn of phrase, and in a lot of ways it speaks to the purpose in being here today. We spend a lot of time in Washington talking about India, and we often gloss over the fact that it's no more monolithic than the United States. There are many Indias, and there just as there are many Americas, and that's really what we're here to explore today. CNAS was started in 2007 to foster exactly this kind of dialogue, a free, open, and honest exchange about the most important issues of our time. And from our perspective, these sessions will build on work that we've done over the past several years, starting with a study in 2009 led by two members of our board, Richard Armitage and Nick Burns, but really led by Richard Fontaine, that launched us on this multi-year, in-depth study of the U.S.-India relationship. And that report was a milestone for our organization because it was the first project that we actually launched overseas. We launched it in New Delhi in January of 2009, and then in many ways it culminated the next year in an opportunity to provide direct feedback to the U.S. administration before the president's visit to India. And now we continue to write on critical issues in this relationship, everything from maritime security to export controls to the need for international institutions to evolve to reflect the 21st century and the challenges posed by other states in the region. And so, because these issues are challenging, because they inspire many different views, and because they matter to the state of our world, we at CNAS are pleased to be here today with Henry, with his colleagues, and with the Segor Center. And we look forward to a rich conversation. So thank you all for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, indeed. Now Nate and I are going to disappear, and our colleague Deepa Lopali is going to chair for us the first panel. So may I invite our Indian guests, and we're extremely pleased to have you with us. We thank you for coming these long distances to share with us your views and to help us better understand the discussion that is going on in India, and we will begin the discussion with a set of topics related to the security and defense area. So may I invite you to the podium.